If you're rocking to get up and it's not a rocking chair, it's time for the Joint Relief Institute. Fast relief, covered by Medicare. 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is a Monday afternoon. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, and I'm glad you are. And so Jim Dahlke is here as well. Will Flanagan from Chicago Inno, as they are most Mondays. Welcome, men.
Thanks for having us,
yeah,
Steve.
Thanks so much.
You bet. I was saying earlier, I guess I didn't say this on the air, but before our time together is finished today, we will give everyone an update on the motorized suitcase.
Yes. Yes, that is coming.
Jim Dahlke has been writing about for years now.
Yes, the half rascal scooter, half carry-on bag.
And, you know, especially given the TSA lines, I think it's appropriate that people have a place to sit and scoot at the same time. So there's an update on that coming. You guys have an event coming up about the state of innovation in Chicago, right?
Yeah, it's our big event. It's this Wednesday. Basically, I mean, we're covering this community, this industry every day. We're writing 3, 4, 5 stories about entrepreneurs, tech companies, founders, basically everyone doing innovative stuff in Chicago. And this is our event that takes what we write about and we put it in a room. So we have keynotes, we have panels, we have fireside chats. Leading off is Charles Adler, who is a co-founder of Kickstarter, who actually was building Kickstarter while in Chicago, and he's back working on a new project, so he's going to tell us a little more about that. It's cool. If you like what we do, if you like listening to us, it's a fun event.
And it who doesn't, Will? Come on.
It basically takes what we do and it puts it in a physical room, and that's what we kind of want to do is just you read us, now you can watch some of the stuff we talk about.
Yeah, we've got Genevieve Thiers, the founder of Sitter City, David Kalt, the CEO and founder of Reverb. We've got a really jam-packed lineup with some really interesting topics.
Well, what is the state of innovation in the city of Chicago?
Well, we're going to hit it, and what's interesting is we're going to be dialing into a few things where there's a lot of density. One, we're going to be hearing from several of the serial entrepreneurs who, you know, have built not just 10, 15, 20 years ago, but are building today, and they're going to comment on why is that different? Is it easier? Is it harder? What is their third, you know, what does it mean to be a serial entrepreneur in Chicago? We're going to be hearing from a couple people about how to diversify the pipeline. Because you can't, everyone talks about how do we bring more diversity in tech, and that's not a snap your fingers thing. It has to start at the pipeline.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that idea of the serial entrepreneur interests me because, you know, there's the guy or the woman who's always got a dream of something, mm-hmm. and she creates that dream, and then she builds it, and that's where she stays. And then there are the serial guys or women who create something, and then boom, okay, what am I going to create next? And they must be completely different mindsets.
Exactly, and serial entrepreneurs are really vital to a maturing tech ecosystem, and that's something that Chicago is still kind of, they're adding. I mean, Silicon Valley has second, third, fourth, fifth-time entrepreneurs. I mean, that's why that technology ecosystem is thriving the way that it is, and Chicago is on its way. The more second and third time entrepreneurs that are here in Chicago, that means there are more startups, there's more money coming into the ecosystem, and so you're going to see that Chicago is going to become a stronger tech community the more third, fourth, fifth time founders.
All right, that's the state of innovation that's coming up. Wednesday night?
Well, Wednesday during the day, yeah, 1 to 6. You can learn more on ChicagoInno.com.
We've had Todd Connor on here, the founder of The Bunker, and that's a special sort of incubator for military vets, right? Mm-hmm. How are they doing now?
It's a really great program, and actually we were just talking about this the other day. It's probably The Bunker is one of the most things I'm proudest of in the Chicago tech ecosystem, and it's founded here in Chicago. And so The Bunker is basically a community for veteran entrepreneurs. After veterans finish their service, a lot of veterans want to be entrepreneurs, but they maybe don't have the resources, they don't have the network. And so The Bunker basically is this community for entrepreneurs. And they had a demo day last week where they had some companies present, and really from all over the country. And The Bunker is this community that started here in Chicago, but now it is all over the U.S. There are cities with bunker programs in entrepreneurial hubs across the U.S. with some really interesting programs.
Go ahead, Will.
And it's a great idea because the concept behind it is that veterans are uniquely qualified to be entrepreneurs. They're good at leading teams. They're good at executing. They're good at problem solving. They're on time. You know, all of those things that, you know, if you would describe what's your ideal entrepreneur, that stuff is taught. That's the idea is veterans are veterans are trained to be entrepreneurs, whether it's in a different field or not. So the big number every time I've gone to the bunker I hear over and over again is that after World War II, 49% of veterans started their own business. That number is now down to 6%.
Okay, so what's the difference? Why is it not happening now? Because I would think it'd be easier for them, for people to start their own business now.
Well, I think that's the problem that the bunker is trying to solve. It's really shining a spotlight. It's making it easier. It's bringing those resources. And it's, again, we talk all of the time, every time we're in, about the optics. And what the bunker is doing by expanding this network across the country is they're saying, like, you can do it. You have the skill set. You have the ideas. Execute. So I don't know why that number stopped, why it went from 50 to under 10. But, you know, the bunker is trying to reverse that trend.
All right, that's Will Flanagan, Jim Dulkey here as well. They are, Will is the general manager of Chicago Inno, and Jim Dulkey is, well, he's probably your best staff reporter, don't you think, Will?
One of our staff reporters.
That's on my business card.
Okay, so we're going to talk about the motorized suitcase and also buying your canned peas from Amazon. I want to kick that around after a break. Right now, it is 12:18. It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Coming up after a break, we will talk to Andy Smith from the Mutual Fund Store. We'll talk about college funding in a way, but also I want to talk about what college grads should start doing now so that they can retire by the time they get to be my age. Wish I had had that advice. Right now, Will Flanagan and Jim Dulkey in the studio, the boys from Chicago. You know, okay, I said before you guys came in that Amazon is going to start making... Well, are they going to come up to agreements with their own line of grocery products? Did I read that correctly?
Yeah, Amazon is going to be expanding its private label offering. I mean, Amazon feels like it's been around forever, but it's really not that old, and it started as a middleman. It had one mission: to perfect delivery, to get you what you want real fast. And now it's becoming that everything to everyone. And there's actually a cool, interesting Illinois connection to this story, is that one of the manufacturers they'll be working with to create their own private label, whether it's nuts, coffee, cereal, is Treehouse Foods, which is in Oak Brook, Illinois.
Okay, so what's the point of this? That they're not just going to make their money by delivering Del Monte peas, that they're going to do it by delivering Bezos peas or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, Jim, what's better, me giving you Steve's thing or me giving you my thing?
They're both so good.
I want to make my thing. I've learned consumer behavior.
Okay,
I've
but it's not really your thing. Here's the thing, though. It's not really your thing.
It's not your thing.
It's not my thing either.
That's right. The key is even though it's not really my thing, it's not yours. And I have better margins on the thing that's not quite mine versus the thing that's truly yours.
And Amazon's going to really own the entire cycle here, right? I mean, you can think about, you know, if Amazon is getting into diapers, you could have your Amazon Echo and say, Alexa, order me some diapers. And now Amazon can bring its diapers delivered to your house in an hour or less. I mean, that's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and in another detail,
we're all going to be living in a company town.
100%, yeah. And it allows them to test more things with a little less risk when it's their quote-unquote own product. They can test pricing where they put it on the site, and there's less problem. You know, you're not ruining a supplier relationship if you're testing things with yourself.
So what do you do if you're Del Monte and you want to get your peas delivered?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing Jim and I were talking about could be the problem, is they established this supplier relationship. They built their whole brand on working with other brands, and now all of a sudden, you know, what if I'm the pea company saying, hey, why is that pea company ahead of mine? Well, that's the Amazon pea company.
Right. Well, I hope this is our most awkward economic conversation we ever have, because we're talking about each other's things and our peas.
Yeah, that's it. High tech.
Let's go to the airport where no one is moving at all, and except for Jim Dulkey, our intrepid reporter who continues to cover this story about a motorized suitcase, right? We talked about this last fall.
Yes, I'll happily join and cover the motorized travel bag beat anytime you want. But yeah, this is a Kickstarter campaign that launched in the fall, and it didn't make its goal, so it wasn't able to deliver on that. But like many Kickstarter projects in the past, it's not giving up. So it's gonna, it's retooled its website and its product, launched a new website.
Well,
and
tell us what it is.
So basically,
paint the picture for us.
Yeah. And I think I teased it earlier. It is sort of a combination between a Rascal scooter and a carry-on bag. So it looks very much like a black carry-on luggage bag for the airport that has a little seat and a motor on it. It goes about 8 miles an hour. I think you can go like 6 miles on a charge.
Now, do you sit side saddle or do you sit? Do you straddle it?
It's got places for your feet. Okay. Yeah, and it's got like, you know, a digital dashboard. It's got braking. It's kind of got everything. And it's so ridiculous that it actually might work. They said they've got around 3,000 pre-orders, and they're retooling. They worked with a faculty member from MIT, actually, on the new redesign, and they are launching a new crowdfunding campaign.
How can they have 3,000 people willing to buy this now?
You know what? I have no idea.
Who would it be, really? I mean, I'm making fun of it, but who would be the writer?
I mean,
I have five of them. I have five of those pre-orders walking around.
You got 2,995.
Think about how many times you're in the airport and you're seeing, that cart that's beeping behind you that's carrying a bunch of people who are older, maybe have a disability, have trouble getting through the airport. You can think about this being a device that helps people get through the airport that might have a bum leg or a bum knee or something. So I think there is some practicality to this product that does look a little silly on the surface.
Yeah, and Steve, I think you're underestimating our general laziness. Jim painted a nice picture of people who actually need this, and then there's me who I don't need this. I can't afford it right now, but I want it. I want to drive around on a mini little golf cart through the airport.
I'm just picturing people waiting in the TSA lines, just hovering or circling in their motorized suitcases, you know, like because they're in perpetual motion.
As long as they don't add a horn to it, I think we'll all be.
Oh, that's coming. Yes. That could be my idea. I just took it from you. I will have a horn or a bell, maybe a nice little bell. Will Flanagan, Jim Dahlke, they write for Chicago. You know, great to see you guys.
Great seeing you, Steve.
We'll see you next Monday. Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, 12:37 on this Monday afternoon. Andy Smith is back in the studio, Executive Vice President of Investments from the Mutual Fund Store. Andy, well, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hey, this is awesome. Thanks for having me.
It's a nice little view, isn't it?
It's awesome. Radio is, you know, a couple of guys in a closet, you know, just maybe a window, but this is awesome.
Looking out on Michigan Avenue. You know, I had a buddy whose daughter graduated. They were in South Bend this weekend.
Okay.
Graduated from Notre Dame. And I've got a girl who's going to be a junior in college. And I would imagine the key now, these young graduates are trying to find jobs. All the focus is on their career, how they're going to make it.
Right.
But one of the things I want to talk with you about is that this is the time to start talking to them about saving a little money, too.
Absolutely. I mean, this is kind of, you don't want to say this, but this is when the hard work starts, right? So you're kind of on your own. You have these wonderful ideas about getting your first job and all these things that you're going to do. But one of the things that we really try to tell people is that, look, this is when the rubber meets the road. You have to start saving.
You said it's the hard work. In a way, I guess if you're, you know, trying to buy your macaroni and cheese, you don't have a lot of cash, it's hard. But it's a little easier, too, to get in that habit now.
It is. And so the thing is if you do all the right things and if you do the hard stuff from the beginning, then it's not so much of an issue when you're 35, 40, 45, right, 50 and realizing that, oh, my gosh, I did not start when I was supposed to. So, yeah, these young grads getting their first jobs, I mean, even if you can save 1%, 2% of your income, if you have a 401k at work, and the employer is going to give you a match, oh, my gosh, this is free money. This is the stuff that you absolutely have to be doing because the best thing that you have right now is time on your side to let these 1%, 2% per year start to build up.
How much difference does it make? I mean, if someone waits a little bit longer, I would imagine it will have a big impact on when they can retire.
It does. One of the things that we talk with people a lot is that, you know, they think that there's some magical time to start, or if they didn't start at that magical time, then they may as well work until they, you know, put them in the ground.
Right.
But that's not really the thing. It makes it easier. Right? So if you have 5 years, 10 years, 15 years under your belt and you're able to make these things work and you've learned all of these things that you're supposed to do all along, yeah, it's going to be easier. But if you're, you know, if you're 45, if you're 50, if you're looking at, you know, retirement 10, 15 years down the road, you still got to start. You still do the 1%, 2% just to get something in the bank.
It's also, too, I think it's the idea that if you say I'm going to do it tomorrow, I'm going to do it tomorrow, you know, that day never comes. If you get started when you're 22, even if it's a little bit,
then you're in the habit of it.
Absolutely, because, you know, the best thing that you have is just time on your side. Markets are going to go up. Markets are going to go down. I tell the young people that we talk to, it's like you are going to see recessions. You'll probably see a couple of market crashes. But you've got, what, 35, 40 years that you can ride these things out. So you need to be as aggressive as you can. Don't not save because you think, A, there's some magical time, or B, you don't have enough, or C, you don't know what the heck that you're doing.
All right, so two things. One, save, but you use the word aggressive, too. So when you are saving it in your mid-20s or early 20s, you can afford to buy those aggressive funds.
Absolutely. And so be as aggressive as you can. You've got time on your side. The thing is that people think that they want to be safe, or they've seen some things happen to their parents or their grandparents.
Sure.
They've lived through 2008, 2009, and they think that they need to be conservative. Or they're just starting out, and they don't want to see any money leave that they're putting into some 401k or IRA. But the markets are going to go down. Markets are going to go up. If you can let things just really compound and be as aggressive as you can here at the beginning, it will reap benefits beyond your imagination.
One of the things that I've run across and that has interested me lately is the millennials who tend to save a little bit more than previous generations, but because they lived through the 2008 troubles, they're less likely to invest it. And so that's something you
kind of blows your mind.
It really does.
It's like, oh my gosh, I love the fact that you're saving, but we need to kind of talk about this cash under the mattress sort of thing.
Come on, that's what great grandpa did. You don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
We've got other ways to save our money.
There's an example that we give often, and it's the two kind of college grads. They're just starting out. One saves $2,000 a year for 15 years. The other waits 15 years and then starts saving $2,000 a year from the 16th year until forever,
mm-hmm.
right? But because that person started early and because they were aggressive and let the money compound, there's like $500,000, you know,
difference,
by the time.
Yeah.
That's huge money.
Right, that's huge money.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk parents in college, too, because that's the other end of it. Parents, when it comes to helping their kids, I've got one in college, one going next year. I don't want them to leave with debt, you know, so I want to help them as much as I can.
Right.
But I think you have to figure out that balance of where you're not saddling yourself with a forever retirement day too.
Yeah, and the thing that I tell people is that, look, you can borrow for just about anything. I mean, literally, you can borrow for just, it's mind blowing, you know. But you just can't borrow for your retirement. And so there's, God bless them, the parents who want to help their kids and get them through college without any debt and do all these different things. But you really have to break it down into one of four parts. The parent can pay a little bit. The child can pay a little bit. And, yeah, there's probably going to be some loans, and there's probably going to be some scholarships. So it's not this 100%. I mean, I worked through college, worked on an HVAC truck and, laid gas pipe in houses during the
summer. I drove a Frito truck.
Yeah.
I was a vacation fill-in driving a Frito truck.
That's awesome.
Around Milwaukee. It was great.
That's what, these are character building. This is, 25 years down the road.
Andy, I actually crashed into a Stuckey's restaurant with my Frito truck. So.
And made the best sale of your career.
Oh, sort of, yeah. It was with the management. But you advocate, and this is where your courage comes in, because you suggest that before kids go to college, that parents sit down with them and say, okay, here, if you want to study, here's what you might make in this career.
Let's talk about the majors.
Right? And so everyone says you got to foster creativity or encourage your kids, and I think you probably do, but you sort of are advocating, at best, a middle ground there.
There is. I mean, don't not have hobbies, but maybe every hobby can't turn into a career.
Yeah.
You know, people get on magazine covers. They make movies about people who took the stuff that they love and they turned it into a career. But that's not everybody.
Medieval gardening? You don't think that's something that...
What is it? French medieval sociolinguistics?
Right.
It's like there's like two jobs out there.
Right. Well, so
if you have one of them, feel free to call. We can talk about the successes. But, sit down with the kids. Talk about... Look, science, tech, engineering, math, I mean, these are huge, huge things. Colleges around the world are doing huge things now to develop these programs. This is really where the future is. You just have to be mindful of that, right? So do what you want, read what you want, study what you go places, do all these different things, but just be very mindful that come 4 years, 5 years, 6 years, 6 years down the road, you may be having a basement house.
Well, thank God Gregor Mendel's parents didn't tell him that. We would have never had the peas.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the mutual fund store, because I know you talk a lot about the need for having a written down plan and following through on it. What can people find out at the mutual store?
Sure.
Mutual fund store, I should say.
We're one of the largest fee-based registered investment advisors in the country. But the thing that really makes us different is that from the very beginning, we've always been a fiduciary. And so that means that we always put our clients' best interest first. There's a lot of people that you can work with out there that don't do that, right? They're trying to push product, or they're trying to do stuff that's good for the company or themselves, as opposed to sitting down and saying, look, this is where you are right now. These are your goals. These are your needs and wants and wishes. This is the plan that you got to put together so that you can actually get there. And these are the things that we do there in Northbrook, over in Oak Park, or Oak Brook, and down in Orland. But there's a lot going on right now. It's not just trying to save as much as you can and throw money into your 401k. There are so many facets to retirement planning right now that this is the stuff that we cover.
Andy Smith is the Executive Vice President Investments, the Mutual Fund Store. Great to talk to you again.
Great to be here.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on Spoken Like a True Radio Host. I heard you. Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Orion. It is 12:51, just about 12:52. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. One of the things that jumped out at me in the news from this, I guess it's just been a couple of weeks ago now, is a change in, I'm going to use the word core curriculum, I'm not sure that's the accurate word, for students at the University of Illinois. Currently, they have to take a course in Western culture, and then one that is either non-Western culture or U.S. minority culture, one or the other. And the people there were finding that there weren't a lot of people taking classes in U.S. minority culture, or perhaps not as many as they had hoped. And so they've changed the requirement. Now you're going to take a Western culture class, a non-Western culture class, and a U.S. minority culture class. One of the guys behind that is Professor Ronald Bailey. He's the co-chair of the Committee on Race and Ethnicity, and he joins us on a phone line now, I'm assuming from Champaign. Professor, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
How's everything in Champaign, Urbana?
You know, we just finished a very lively graduation set of ceremonies yesterday, and things are quieting down a bit.
Did you find yourself walking around campus when just about everyone is gone and relishing it or sort of mourning it?
No, I think those of us who are around are working on grades and, you know, excited about what our students learned and how they are reflecting that. And, you know, maybe we'll get a break a little bit in a few days.
Okay. So tell me about this this push now to increase the class requirement, or maybe it doesn't increase the number of hours someone needs to take, to include a class in minority culture. Why do you think that is important?
Well, you know, one, it does not increase the number of credits required.
Okay.
It just says that within the general education requirements that all students, you know, have to adhere to, we will now ask them to take the three courses that you laid out.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just so for the general education requirement, what we're talking about there is these are the classes that every student, no matter what they're studying, generally every student has to take, correct?
That's right.
Okay.
And they're distributed, you know, at composition, cultural studies, humanities and the arts, natural sciences and technology, quantitative reading and reasoning, social and behavioral sciences, and generally languages. So those are the general categories. And within those requirements, the Senate just passed a change to have the course on a U.S. ethnic group included as one of the required courses.
And why do you think that will benefit the students?
Well, you know, one, this discussion of diversity has been going on a long time, and initially it was how do you get courses that reflect the history of diverse groups in the U.S. reflected in the curriculum. I think more recently we've been revisiting those early initiatives and see the importance, you know, as stated in the university strategic plan, to emphasize issues like social inequality and cultural understanding. So this change reflects that ongoing discussion of how we fine-tune the curriculum to address important issues that students should be versed in as they go out into the broader world and as they spend time here on campus.
So, we, you know, and we're in this era now of a lot of attention being paid to police and police shootings. And interesting, out of Champaign today, or Champaign researchers, there's a study that says police, more likely than others, say they are blind to racial differences. So they tend to see themselves as colorblind more than the rest of us do, which was interesting to me because I would think that might not be the case. So that just speaks to maybe understanding different groups or getting a fresh look at different groups to sort of appreciate where they are.
That's exactly right. I think people look at this sometimes and get nervous about what's generally called political correctness, but this provides us with an opportunity to talk and work with all of our students so that they get an opportunity to dig a little deeper in some of these issues that are confronting either their disciplines or the occupations that they will be in or the society in general. And so looking at the research and discussions regarding policing is a very pressing example of that kind of an issue.
Okay, here's my worry, that the black kids at school are going to take an African-American studies course, the Hispanic kids maybe, you know, Hispanic studies, and I don't know where the whites would go, but so we're not going to branch out and learn about others. Is there some sort of mechanism to make sure we're learning about other people?
Well, I mean, I think a well-taught course in ethnic studies is going to open students up to understanding how these particular experiences of ethnic groups reflect broader trends in U.S. history. It's not a zero-sum game. It's not an either-or kind of thing. So what are the connections between and among the groups that you just mentioned? So students of all nationalities should be able to come into these courses and not only learn the particular material, but also think about what it means in a broader context. I had a student from Singapore who at the end of the semester said that my course in Intro to Afro-American Studies helps him think through some issues of cultural diversity in his native land.
Oh, great.
And so that's what we desire as we teach these courses.
Professor Ronald Bailey, the co-chair of the Committee on Race and Ethnicity at the U of I, time goes too fast. Thank you very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And good luck. Enjoy your summer.
Thanks much.
You're listening to the Business Lunch on 720 WG.